Hi everyone, welcome to the Six Ways from Sunday podcast. Six Ways from Sunday is an online faith community exploring how we think, love, and act in the world. And it's part of a new project called Rising Spirit Ministry, which is a three-way partnership between this new online community and the Pinoca United Church and the Basha United Church. I'm your host, Ben Wilson, and each week I sit down with Robin King and other guests and we explore different topics of faith over a cup of coffee. Robin is the minister at both Pinoca United and Basha United Church, and he alternates back and forth between our two churches each Sunday. So how we do that is we live stream the full service at 10:30 a.m. Mountain Time every week. So if you'd ever like to join us for church, please do any Sunday. You can watch or listen from your home or wherever you're at. And you can check out that live stream, as well as archived services and sermon videos at risingspiritministry.com or by searching Rising Spirit Ministry on YouTube. Also, the Six Ways from Sunday Facebook page is a great way to connect with the community and join the discussion. We would love to hear your comments and feedback on the show and love to have you join the conversation there. So today we're going to be talking about, again, what is coming for this Sunday's sermon and what's in store for us from the lectionary, or what have you got planned?
Well, it's not in the, this isn't in the lectionary, but Sunday's Earth Day. So I thought that that would be a really appropriate time to maybe have a conversation about pipelines and tankers and how we use oil and gas and how plastics are ruining the environment and generally just cover all the pollution and stuff that we do and how bad we are.
Really cheerful stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, no. I'm not going to do that. That is a conversation, not the way I framed it just now, but that is nonetheless a conversation. In fact, that's a whole lot of conversations, and that's the thing about those conversations and about Earth Day for me is that it's kind of the day to remind ourselves what's actually really behind those conversations. And quite often those conversations turn into something very black and white, good, bad, you know, those kind of things, and there's no maneuvering in the conversation, and they get very adversarial. But the fact is, none of those issues are as black and white as we try and make them. And, you know, it would be really helpful. In fact, let's have a conversation about those things, but let's do it by talking about one of the scripture passages we have for Sunday.
Okay.
Which is the 23rd Psalm. Everybody knows the 23rd Psalm. I shouldn't have said everybody, should I really? Yeah, I think you can. Because, you know, there's things in the Bible that will recognize, you know, you'll say a verse, John 3:16, right?
Yeah. It's up there with John 3:16. It's got to be in the top.
See, I think it's more than up there. I think if you're somebody, we used to say that the Lord's Prayer was the thing that we most remember. But the fact is that we don't teach it as much as we used to, and people don't memorize it in Sunday school like we used to. But the 23rd Psalm was always something that, one of those ones that we memorized in Sunday school. It was a familiar mm-hmm. one. And so right away, it's familiar to people. It's familiar to people because, sadly, one of the times we most frequently hear it is at a celebration of life, or a memorial or a funeral.
Yeah.
Which is too bad because it's actually about life. But the other thing about it is that it's literally the go-to thing in movies and TV
oh, yeah.
and books and pop culture. Like if you got a funeral scene, you move in the clergyman or woman or whoever who's standing at the end of the casket, and they're doing the 23rd Psalm.
Yeah.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not... And not just the 23rd Psalm, but the King James Version, right? That's the version mm-hmm. we memorized
That's the
as
one
kids.
We know.
And the language is beautiful. It's very poetic. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, right? He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. It's great. It's beautiful and everything. I have some issues with then meaning... because we've kind of gone with the beautiful language part, but the thing about the 23rd Psalm is, it's we think, oh, shepherd, It's about sheep, and we're sheep, and God is the shepherd. And then, of course, there's a whole bunch of people who have issues around the whole we're sheep thing, right?
Right.
Sheeple, as people like to refer to us in a kind of derogatory way of using that. But it's not just about God being a shepherd. If it were, it wouldn't. I honestly don't think it would have quite so much meaning for people still. Because even though the church has tried its best to ensure that you still know what a shepherd is all about, the fact, do you know a shepherd? I don't know a shepherd. I know somebody who had sheep, but when I asked him if he was a shepherd, he said he wasn't really a shepherd. He had sheep.
Yeah, I know sheep producers. Right. I know a few exactly. people, but I don't know if they would consider
but
themselves
shepherds.
But
would they shepherds? Call themselves shepherds? Because, you know, we have this sort of, and this is our biblical view, right? The lonely shepherd boy, you know, with his staff and the sheep all around him and everything. And being a shepherd was not a great life. It was, they were the least of anybody. Which, by the way, is probably one of the reasons why the first people to hear the news of Jesus' birth were shepherds, right?
Right.
Because they were literally the least. Nobody liked them.
They also spent a lot of time in solitude out in the wilderness, getting very bored, hence the story of the boy who cried wolf.
Right, but, bored. Essentially they keep sheep, right? Or the other way we might know shepherds is the sheepdog from the Bugs Bunny cartoons, right?
Cartoon, yeah.
Yeah. But that's our kind of reference points for a shepherd, unless you're somebody who goes to church. Because then at some point, somebody will have explained to you that not only, first of all, a shepherd in the first century, it would have been a very lonely life. Nobody liked them. They spent a lot of time. They literally spent all their time out with the sheep. They smelled bad. They looked funny. They dressed weird. All of the worst things you could possibly
they were
say.
Poor.
That are, of course, all entirely superficial. But the thing about that is, the other thing you would have heard is that the shepherd is symbolic or emblematic of kingship to the Hebrews. That being a shepherd was a symbol of being a king. The king, you wanted your king to be like a shepherd because the shepherd cared for and nurtured and protected and did all of the things that a king is supposed to do. It wasn't just about, I'm keeping these sheep so I can eat you later.
Mm-hmm.
It was about caring for them and nurturing them and protecting them and all of those things that kings are supposed to do. But we don't have that anymore. There are probably still shepherds in places in the world where a person goes out with the sheep, but that's not really how we do that anymore. But still we have this sort of iconic thing, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And that's how we know the psalm. It's the shepherd psalm. Except is it? See, I think the psalm, yes, the introduction to the psalm and the role of God in this psalm is the shepherd. But look where it goes. It goes literally everywhere.
Okay, so walk us through it.
He makes me to lie down in green pastures.
Mm-hmm.
There's still waters, right? Yea, though I walk through the valley of shadow. And this is one part in particular which I always have had difficulty with because it always, the whole shadow of death thing has always kind of bugged me, is that the valley of the shadow of death, I think people traditionally understand as meaning, well, death. That's probably one of the reasons why we
use it at funerals
so frequently at funerals. Except, although I would then argue that one of the reasons that we hear it so frequently at funerals isn't so much that line that makes it appropriate to funerals, it's that the whole thing itself is tremendously comforting.
Right.
To me, I like the, I think it's the New International Version now that says the Valley of Shadow. The New Revised Standard might do that too, but they say Valley of Shadow.
And it takes out the part of death.
And take out the death part, because the moment you add death to that, the Valley of the Shadow of Death, you have implied to people that it's about death.
Right.
If you take one step back from it, at the very least, you've implied to them that they are walking in the shadow of death because someone near them has died. Right.
Okay.
But if you go Valley of Shadow, you now are able to encompass all of the times in our lives when we might actually feel like God isn't there, where something isn't going well, or whether we're challenged by something, or we're suffering because of something, whether we're grieving or we're sick, or all of those times aren't the green pastures.
Yeah, we're just not walking in the light.
Right, and to me that's so much more meaningful, because you just said green pastures and beautiful streams, and you created this idyllic view of something beautiful and comforting, and then you went straight to death. What about all the other times in life? What about all those other times in life where things aren't perfect?
Right.
Where they're not green pastures and streams and things.
So to you, are you saying that it's about the comforting notion that God is with us through that whole range of life experiences?
Here's the part I like in particular about it is, it's God is with us through all of the geography of our lives. Whatever it is, there it is. There, God is there. Right? And it goes on to say, God prepares a table for me, right? God feeds me, God celebrates me, even in the face of my enemies, right? And then goes on even further, my cup overflows, I am anointed with oil, right? Which is a traditional way that you acknowledged kingship in particular, but the traditional way that you anoint, you acknowledge somebody who is special, unique, special to God, right? So I am special to God. We all are special to God, by the way, just, you know. My cup overflows, like I've, with goodness and great, things are awesome because God is there.
Yeah.
Right? Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. It doesn't say, if I do this, anywhere in that.
Mm.
It says, God is with me through all of the geography of my life. God cares for me and protects me. There's a part about the staff, the rod and thy staff, right? Shepherds didn't just have a staff. For, you know, moving the sheep about and everything. They had a rod, which was basically a weapon.
Yeah.
Right? To protect the sheep from animals and, well, animals with two legs too. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Because God is with me, goodness and mercy. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that's always, that closing line's always been interesting to me, because I assumed, and I'll come back to this in a second, but I assumed that in saying I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, it meant I am with God.
Right.
Where God is, which is everywhere, but I am with God. And I was reading something the other day that said, no, actually, the house of God, right, the house of the Lord, and there are some Christian denominations that still refer to it that way, their churches as the house of God. The house of the Lord was the temple where God lived, right? Because when they built the temple, the Hebrews believed that God actually lived in the temple.
Right. This is even before that gospel was written then. There, like the temple as in the Hebrew temple, not like modern Christian churches you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. No, even long before that. But that's kind of an interesting carryover that we often refer to churches as the house of God.
Yeah.
I grew up with that. I don't know that we do so much anymore, but there may well still be some denominations that refer to churches as God's house.
But it was written as...
But when it was written, when this psalm would have been written, it would have meant the temple.
Right.
Where God lives. Which, see, I think this is the thing about Psalm 23. This is where it ties into the Earth Day thing.
Okay.
Is that through all of the geography of our lives, God is with us. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Where is God? Well, for me, God is, well, God's in you, God's in me, God's in the world. And that just makes me think where I live. Not after I'm, you know, dead and gone, I'll go to heaven kind of thing. That's where God is, you know. But where I live is where God is. The earth is where God is. The earth is God's home. We are God's home.
Mm-hmm.
We live in that. So we quite literally live in that geography that's been described for us, right? Well, how do you care for where you live? Right? I mean, And this is where we definitely get into gray area, because lots of people have different opinions about how they care for where they live.
Of course.
Don't get me started. But that's the thing, is that if the whole world, all of creation is God's house, shouldn't we be caring for it as if it's not just our house, but it's God's house? It's special. It's unique. We have a relationship with the earth just as we have a relationship with God. Right? That means we have a relationship. It doesn't mean that it's this or it's that. Like, you can't go, it's this is right, this is wrong. It's a relationship. And how we have that relationship with the earth is like our relationship with God. There are times when we are closer to God, and there are times when we are further away from God, depending on how we are being, right?
And each of us has a unique relationship to God, too. Yeah. Like, last week you talked a lot about how we're all children of God, and we all have a different path or journey or way of expressing that relationship with God, way of finding that path to God. So it's the same with our relationship with the earth, right? There isn't one right way to live.
Right. As long as we understand that in the sense of it being relational, mm-hmm. right? And it being a relationship. I grew up in the city. I've never lived on a farm. Bashaw is literally the smallest place I've ever lived, I think. But I live in town.
Yeah.
In fact, I kind of have a black thumb. I'm not really good with plants, generally speaking. I don't think you need to be a farmer to know that a farmer has to have a relationship with the land that they are farming. However you describe that relationship, they have to have a relationship. People who have cattle or sheep, right, they have a relationship of sorts. I mean, in the best possible way, right? It's about nurture and care and ensuring that they are protected, mm-hmm. right? When farmers need to care for the land in order for it to produce what they are trying to produce, right?
In order for there to be another, for there to be a future.
Yeah, and see, to me, it doesn't matter what it is that you are doing with the land. I'm not going to even say to, but with the land. As long as we understand it as with, and it's a relationship, right? It's a give and take. It's a it feeds us, we need to feed it kind of relationship, right? And like, even when it comes to things like fossil fuels and things like that, if we need to sort of consider those things, I think, in the context of it being like a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a relationship not just between us and it. It's a relationship where the it is also God's house. It's part of what, and this is where it comes back for me. It kind of comes back to something I said before about it depends on, I suppose, it doesn't depend on. It's whatever your understanding of God is. If you understand God as, the way Christians or people who have a religion, right, a system, understand God, or if you just understand God as being the source of life, or love, mm-hmm. or the fabric of creation, well, there you go, right there, right? If God is the fabric of creation, the thing that connects us, that unites us, it unites us and connects us not just through human beings, but through all of creation.
Yeah.
And so anything we do with creation is part of that.
Absolutely.
It's all part of the fabric.
So let's bring this back to Earth Day, and for people just that are listening, how does this apply to life for an individual?
So the 23rd Psalm, this is where I need another piece here, because the 23rd Psalm reminds me that I live in God's house. And you understand God as I understand God as being the thing that connects us, the love, the source of life, the thing that's life giving, right? And that's the house we live in.
Yeah.
So our relationship to that needs to care for it. It needs to nurture it, and not just the it part, but the relationship part, right? That needs to be taken care of. And this is where I need another piece. And this week, fortunately, we have this other piece right there. It's from the first epistle of John, which I know last time we taught, I very strongly implied that there was parts of the epistle of John I didn't agree with. I didn't like the way the writer of the epistle of John uses the term children of God to create an exclusive community. And things like that. But the thing is that I say that understanding that you can see why perhaps that person might have gone there, the writer would have gone there, the context of where his community was at and trying to build them up, right, and remind them of something very important. And it's a something very important that's the piece that we need, which is that the, much like the Gospel of John, itself, the writer of the first epistle of John goes to great lengths to remind us that love is a verb. Love is an action. And putting love into action is what Jesus teaches us.
Yes.
Right? To live that love, right? And we put love into action when we engage our relationships with it, right? When we care for each other with love, and that means we care for the earth with love because we are part of it. It's our home. And putting that love into action means that however we engage the earth, whatever our relationship is with the earth, it needs to be life-giving. It needs to be loving. It needs to be nurturing. It needs to be positive and true and right.
And that all sounds wonderful, but there's a lot of people would have very, very different views on what that means. So we get into, I mean, not to get political, but there's a lot of debate and there's a lot of disagreement on the right way to, or a good way to manage natural resources, or, you know, all these different political tension that is created out of how do we treat the environment as a country, as a municipality, as individuals, as families. And we've had a, you know, we've done some pretty serious damage to the planet in the last 150 years, that it can be very sobering to look at it and realize that,
right,
that relationship that you're talking about is struggling.
Yes. I'm glad you've said it that way, because yes, it is. So what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that I don't think, well, considering what it's become, especially in the last 20 or 30 years, maybe it's too late to put a belief in love and the positiveness of a relationship into politics. It nonetheless, this isn't just this idea that this is our home and that we are in relationship with each other and the earth and all of that stuff. It doesn't just apply to specific things. It needs to apply to absolutely everything, right? It has to. And no, it doesn't happen right now all the time. And our relationships are struggling. Yes, they absolutely are. But that's all the more reason why we need to have more conversation. Let me just say, by the way, that there's a frequently appearing meme on Facebook these days. It's one of those things that says, you can't say, don't say anything about oil companies or about oil or anything unless you're prepared to give up your car and, you know, heating your house and stop doing this and doing this and this. And I read those things and I think to myself, like, that's wrong. That's fundamentally wrong. What it's saying is, because I use your product, I cannot critique or question the manner in which you produce that product. Would you apply that to any other thing that you purchase?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Like, try applying that to a purchase of a car, right?
Or clothing.
Right?
You know, we object to child food. Labor being used to manufacture textiles in...
Yeah, but that's also true to say that not everybody objects to that, right? Which is... well, unfortunate, and hopefully we can do something about that. The fact is that lots of people don't even think about it. Mm-hmm. And it's all the more reason why we need to draw it to their attention. It's all the more reason why we have to have the conversation. And the thing about having that conversation is that we need to be able to have that conversation as a conversation, not a fight, not an argument. And invariably, that's what it turns into. You say something negative or critical of oil companies, and instantly somebody who works for them tells you that you can't do that because you use their product. But I can, because I use their product, and you should too, because you work for them. Right? You should always be prepared to ask those questions. And I know lots of people don't want to hear that, and lots of people don't want to hear the questions either. But the fact of the matter is, if we engage those questions as a conversation, not an argument, we can share some really amazing ideas.
Yeah.
And if we're open to hearing those ideas, we can do some really amazing things. And that's not, those ideas aren't always just as black and white as stop doing it. Or stop taking oil out of the ground. Stop using fossil fuels. Let's look at alternatives, because you can't do that anymore. Well, let's not say can't. Let's say, can we? How are we best going to grow?
What's going to do the least harm and create the most good?
Yeah, let's look at it as a relationship. What's gonna nurture and grow us best? There was a time when we absolutely thought that that was how we use fossil fuels. Absolutely. Absolutely. But now we've reached a point where we realize what it might also be doing, and so we've looked at other things. We've started to question whether or not that's the only way. And unfortunately, of course, there's, again, it's not black and white, right? There's all sorts of financial issues in there. There's not just questions of profit. Don't even start me there. But there's not just questions of profit. There's questions of, is that in fact financially viable to change something and do it that way? Is there science to back up doing it that way? Or is this a situation where we do our best with what we've got? Right? And if only we could apply the do our best with what we've got to the thinking of what we've got is God's home. Our home, the home of all the things that are connected in that, that are all part of nature in that.
I was listening to the radio yesterday while I was driving, and they were talking about this one specific herd of caribou. I think it was called the West Selkirk herd or something like that. It's the last herd of caribou that has been known to cross the Canada-US border. So there's lots of caribou. Well, I don't know. Yeah. I shouldn't say lots. There is a dangerously low population of caribou overall, but there are other herds that are healthier. This herd in specific, they've been really closely monitoring it and have had several forms of intervention to try to strengthen the herd. They've introduced other animals from other herds into this herd. Nothing's been working. It's at the point now where there's only three animals left, and they're not sure whether these three caribou are even pregnant. They're on their way out, which means what's significant about it is that it's entirely possible that the United States will never see wild caribou again, because this was the last herd that actually migrated that far south. And so it's an indicator, right? And I was driving and thinking and hearing this story and thinking, like, there are so many stories like that herd of caribou that there are a small number of people that are working so hard to make a difference. And then there's the rest of us that didn't even know it was happening. And we're just kind of clueless. And I mean, we can't all be plugged into all of the different issues and struggles and efforts that are happening to try to make our planet healthier. But overall, that relationship needs some love and some nurturing.
It needs some love and action.
It does need some action. Yeah. It can't just end at awareness.
Yeah.
It requires action. Just like any relationship between two humans, like a marriage or a parent and child relationship or a relationship between a person and God, it does require action. Mm-hmm. And those relationships are challenging.
Well, and that's also where this kind of the love and action thing actually even brings me back to the 23rd Psalm, is the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And we hear the whole thing and where we go and the geography of our lives and all that stuff I said before. But again, if we're created in the image of God, at what point do we start to see that one of the things that Jesus was trying to teach us wasn't just to be sheep, it was to be shepherds to others, right? And being a shepherd means putting that love into action. It means leading others to still waters and green pastures. It means accompanying others through the valley of shadow. It means, and it means not just other people, but the earth too.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. Well, thank you again, Robin, for a great conversation over coffee.
Thanks for the coffee.
Looking forward to the next time and looking forward to the church on Sunday to dive into that a bit deeper. Thanks everybody for listening. And if you'd like to hear more from Robin, you can check out his blog at risingspiritministry.com and just click on blog, or check out some of the Sunday morning sermons that are all archived on the website as well. You can also get plugged into the Six Ways from Sunday community at sixwaysfromsunday.ca, where you'll find activities and faith in action resources for families and faith communities, as well as inspiring videos and blogs about living a life full of meaning, acceptance, peace, and well-being. Lastly, we'd love to hear from you, so if you have any thoughts on today's show or ideas for future episodes, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you, and you can reach out to us on Facebook at Six Ways from Sunday, or through the website, again, sixwaysfromsunday.ca. Thanks again for listening, and remember, be love. Take care.